Welcome to the Town Talk Sports El Paso Texas High School Football Roundtable. I'm Alex Nicolás with my broadcast partner, Tony Grajava, and coach. The bi-district round is over. On to the area round, round two of the UIL Texas High School Football Playoffs. And for those teams that are lucky to be practicing in middle November when it gets dark right towards the end of practice, you know, just talk about that feeling as a coach running a program. And, you know, for some here in El Paso, you know, for most here in El Paso, it's a huge, huge accomplishment to be able to be playing on the second weekend in the UIL Texas High School Football Playoffs.
Well, first of all, you can tell the coaching staff, players, everybody, you know, you have that feeling of pride. You know, pride to be playing when other teams may not be playing.
Right.
You know, that's important. And then, of course, yeah, you have to change your schedule up a little bit, the workout schedule, depending on how many days you have to prepare, and, you know, the watching film, and, you know, preparing for the actual opponent. It's going to be a little bit different than it is in the regular season. So, yeah, it is. It's like a second season, really.
Definitely is. So you're looking back to last week, 12 games. Four of those featured El Paso on El Paso Crime in the District 5A, or Class 5A Division 2. Four of those teams move on. Meanwhile, El Paso, the rest of the weekend, 1-7. Definitely a tough weekend for the D1 5As. Those get swept. You know, looking at it, it was definitely a down year for that district.
It was.
You know, a couple of teams obviously rose to the occasion during district play. But, you know, that was what we kind of expected coming into district play with them, or with those teams that came in. Looking at District 1-6A, definitely some tough matchups. Obviously, the one that we'll get started with the review of the bi-district round, the one that we were at last Thursday, Coach Midland Lee and Montwood. That was a rematch of an early season game, and obviously Midland Lee got off to that really quick start, picked off Sebastian Galvan on the first pick the first pass attempt of the ball game. And since that point on, you just felt like, you know, Montwood was playing catch up to a team like Midland Lee, who, you know, you cannot play catch up with. It doesn't matter what quality of a team that you are, getting behind the eight ball by Millen Lee is definitely kind of a self-inflicting wound there.
Well, it is, and, you know, and we talked about it over the weekend. You know, when you get into the playoffs, one of the things that's really important is you can't fall behind. You have to have a quick start, and you know, there were several teams that started off slow. You know, it's hard to come back from behind in any game. It's doubly tough to come from behind against higher competition.
And that Midland Lee game, that was a game where you even felt, even though it was a slow start, you know, Montwood's in that ball game, 27-13. You know, last 2 minutes of half, I think even some of the Midland Lee fans are probably thinking, what's going on? We were up 56-7 or 56 to whatever it was at half against Montwood.
Right.
And then, you know, the change of events there with the late interception and then the punt return, when the Montwood defense was really stepping up. And those are, we've talked about it so many times, particularly on air, maybe not so much on this podcast, but winning the final 2 minutes of each half in high school football and college football are so important. And really, at that point, that is where Midland Lee took over that ball game.
That's definitely true. And, you know, usually when you get an experienced coaching staff and you have a little bit of time in practice during this the week of preparation, especially for this round, second round, third round, and so on, you know, I usually would like to leave a little bit of time on the schedule for special situations. Like you said, 2 minute, the 2 minute area, 4 minute area, you know, red zone, you know, just different types of situations that may occur, just so that the players know that, you know, what's expected and what's coming.
So Montwood's season ends at Midland Lee Thursday night. Last Thursday night, 65-32 was the final in that one. Sticking with Thursday action, let's go up to District 1-5A D1. Chapin, tough road trip up to Amarillo. We really were excited about the way the Huskies finished the season. They found a new mix. They found a new identity, moving Damon Rodriguez over to quarterback. You know, we felt early on the game, that was a 10-7 game early on. I wouldn't believe that may have been even a halftime score, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's true.
That was a close game early on. And then, you know, obviously, you know, the lack of depth that Chapin has, that played into factor, and that parlays into the injuries. But I really felt that this group of young players, Jacob Williamson, one of them that really really stood out to me all season long. You know, this group is going to be fine. You got it. Sometimes you just, you know, it coaches building programs and rebuilding programs. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to take your lumps certain years. Exactly. Chapin rarely takes any lumps. They took a lump this year, but they can take a lump with a playoff appearance by the side of their name.
Oh, and, you know, it's something that Coach Hernandez, the coaching staff, I guarantee you, is already working on right now. And that's putting the new pieces of the puzzle together, you know. And they'll work on that through the off season, get ready for 7-on-7 and spring ball. And I'm sure they'll be ready to go next year.
That was a tough loss for Chapin. Chapin ends the season with a losing record for just the second straight season, but second time in school history where they do not have a winning record. One of the more surprising, outcomes on Thursday night. Let's start with Austin and Hanks, the 4 seed versus the 1 seed. There was a few of those in 5A this weekend. And, you know, for the argument of those that are saying, well, there's too many playoff teams, well, try to argue with me now that there's too many playoff teams. Please exactly. Argue with me. You can at me at Nicholas Alex 915 on Twitter. We can argue all day on that one. This is the reason why 4 teams should be in.
Sure.
You know, it gives, first of all, I mean, who's going to argue giving 15 to 17-year-old kids one more competitive game? Right. I'm not going to be that person.
Right.
And then the proof is in the pudding. And you look at what Austin did, or what you look at particularly what Hanks did. You know, they sort of took Austin's blueprint in a sense of running the ball, controlling the ball. And then not only that, but they're defense stepped up in a huge, huge way, something that really was unexpected by anybody that covers football in our town.
Well, and that's really true. And, you know, when we saw Hanks early on against Parkland, they played Parkland tough in the first half.
They did.
Offensively and defensively, you know. But then in the second half, you know, that sort of went away a little bit. Parkland started to dominate. And, you know, by the fourth quarter, it was pretty much over. But I think that Coach Blair and his staff used that as an example to try and be intense for 4 quarters instead of 2. And, you know, once you get to this area of the playoffs, and like you said, you know, it's a 4-seeded team, but then you can ask Austin, they didn't play like a 4-seed the other night.
So Hanks moves on. They will have a date with the state semifinalists from last year, the Rider Raiders, and we will get into that matchup as this podcast moves on. But, you know, looking at Austin and where this program is going to continue to grow, that's obviously a small setback for Eric Pichardo, but also a good lesson because a lot of these kids that they have, particularly Will Rodriguez, a couple guys on defense that are juniors, I think they even have a couple sophomores, that will be coming back next year. And really, you know, Austin is going to be a problem for, obviously the realignment's coming up and we don't know who's going to go where, fall where. There could be some big movement as we've been told or we've been hearing chatter. But Austin's going to be a problem. It doesn't matter where they're at and no matter what district, Austin has arrived. And I think that's the biggest statement that the Austin Panthers could have made despite definitely a tough loss in by district round.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you can talk to the Austin players this week and they're disappointed. Obviously, you know, it is a big disappointment. It is a big letdown. It's going to take about a week to try and get over that, you know. But once that week is done, you know, you need to get back to work and get preparing for next season.
Looking at another 5A D2 game from last Thursday, Canotillo took care of business against Andrus. Andrus, all sorts of problems at the quarterback position. They were down to, we were hearing that they were down to their third quarterback in a sense. So not the end of the season that the Andrus Eagles wanted, but for Canotillo, the theme of the Canotillo season this year, Coach, has just been finding ways to win.
Right.
And no matter what it is, whether it's been a blowout, a close game, you know, we were hearing that, you know, they have about 6 or 7 players that are injured with ACL injuries. I mean, there's been a lot of things thrown at this Canotillo program, but they continue to thrive. Mm-hmm. They have a goal. They have an identity, and that's very, very important. And honestly, very dangerous when you look forward to, you know, their next round matchup.
Well, you know, Scott Brooks, you know, does a great job. He's been there for, you know, seems like forever. But, you know, he's established that program. So everyone in that program knows what is expected of him. And, you know, to step up, next man up. You know, you always hear that saying. But, you know, when you see it actually happening on the field, that's exactly what happened to Canotillo this season.
We were listening on the way back from that Midland Lee Motwood game, and an 8-minute drive. to open up the quarter for Canotillo. Yeah. You know, you really felt, even listening to the game, you know, 200 miles away.
The domination.
And not only that, but that set the tone. Really set the tone. And that, I think, maybe put a little bit of doubt in an Andres defense that has been confident in playing well all year long. And Canotillo was able just to move the ball methodically all night after that.
Exactly. Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, you know, you play against defenses that are athletic. And, you know, if you try and do all this fancy stuff to try and beat them and find their weakness and everything, you know, that's not going to work. But, you know, if you run right at them and continue to run right at them, a lot like America's did also against Friendship, you know, the defense starts to get frustrated. They start to get tired, you know. And then you start realizing, well, you know what? We can't stop them. You know, they keep coming at us, you know. And it's very hard to make an adjustment when you're in that type of a situation.
So Canotillo with the win, they are back in the area round for the first time since 2014. They will take on Canyon Randall. Of course, we will preview all the area games coming up in this podcast. Keeping with Thursday's bi-district action, let's look at some 4A D1s. There was some very historic victories that happened over the weekend. Seminole defeated Fabens. Fabens season ends a 35-7 loss to Seminole. San Nazario, a very tough draw. Anybody that draws Andrews in the playoff has a tough draw. Andrews with a 63-14 win over San Nazario. A little 3A action. Cahoma defeated Anthony 69-7. But Mountain View, a huge, huge win. Hector Nevada's a big game for the Lobos. 230 yards, three rushing touchdowns, 230 rushing yards, that is. Mm-hmm. And Mountain View, in 11 tries, finally gets that first bi-district championship. And we've seen this team. We saw them against Canotillo. Mm-hmm. You know, now that I look back at it, yeah, Canotillo didn't have Carlos Amato, but and they kept it close. Canotillo was up, I think, 27, up most of the game. But, you know, Mountain View fought back, and we were kind of thinking, well, maybe that's a product of Canotillo giving up. That's a product of how good Mountain View is this season, and a big credit goes out to Coach Rundell and the Mountain View Lobos for the season that they have, and they're still playing.
They are still playing. And, you know, the coach has instilled that pride, and, you know, they're starting to understand, you know, not just how to win, but what it means to win and improve. And, I mean, that's been proven this week. And, you know, it'll be an interesting matchup next week.
So Mountain View moves on. We'll talk about that game coming up here shortly. Let's keep reviewing the bi-district round, some of the games that took place now on Friday. Another tough road trip for the second straight season for the Pebble Hill Spartans. They go up to Tascosa 41-6. They struggled really on both sides of the ball. Joseph Plunk did his thing, but more surprising to me, which really shows how improved Tascosa's defense is, they shut down Pebble Hills. They held Sebastian Ochoa to just 36 yards passing. Wow. I really didn't see that coming at all. I felt Pebble Hills maybe could keep this game close with Ochoa, but whatever game plan they had, I mean, clearly, you know, those coaches up there in Tascosa did a great job, and they were well prepared for the talent that is Sebastian Ochoa.
Well, I mean, you look at any of these teams in that West Texas district that are opponents. You know, you can see by the way that each of these teams play that the coaches have spent. You know, they understand what's going on. The preparation is there. You know, it's not the regular season, but it's what they play for. Midland Lee, we saw it in Midland Lee. You know, we saw it in Friendship, and obviously in Amarillo Tascosa. You know, I mean, they made that run last year. And I think that gave him a lot of experience coming into this season.
And you got some of the same characters, particularly the starting quarterback, which is the most important part of that offense as we got to witness early on in the season. So Tascosa moves on. They defeat Pebble Hills. And it's sad to see the career of Sebastian Ochoa go down. Definitely one of the greats that I'll remember, you know, covering without football. One of the guys that definitely has turned my head is in terms of the production, some of the big plays that we were able to call and watch over the past couple of years. So good luck in your future, Sebastian. I know college football awaits you. Permian staying in 6A D1. Permian knocked off Franklin 48-13. That one was not close at all in the game. We saw a 28-7 halftime score. Maybe I think it was 35-7. Permian's playing with confidence. You're talking about a team where, you know, talking about figuring it out. You know, we talk about figuring out your opponents, but, you know, that Franklin game, now you're looking back, that Franklin game where Franklin went into Mojo Land and beat them by three scores. Mm-hmm. You're talking about wake-up calls in certain points of the season. I think Coach Ellison and the Panthers took that as a wake-up call, and really seems like they haven't looked back since.
Well, exactly. Any of those teams down there, Midland, Odessa area, they hate to lose to El Paso teams. Yeah. It doesn't matter which El Paso team it is. You just don't do that. You know? And you're right. That was the big wake-up call. And, you know, whatever happened, what was it, week three? You know, I mean, to them, it did not matter because they made all the adjustments that they needed to make. And what you saw this past week, that's the real Permian team.
For the second straight year, Permian sets a rushing record against El Paso team in the bi-district round. 517, I think I had them at last year when Coronado played them. And I want to say I saw a tweet where they're like 554 team rushing yards. So there's your Franklin Rappelman. And again, you know, more careers ending. David Powers, Danny Walther, two guys that we follow closely. Gabe Stonewall, Michael Hack. That's a really good group of players that we've – the most fun thing about covering high school football in this town for us is we get to see these guys grow from sophomores and to see them grow into productive players. So when they lose these type of games, you know, we laugh, we joke about it, but at the end of the day, it hurts to see these guys go. And those were staples of the Franklin program the past few years.
Right. And you know, to me, in my coaching time in the past, one of the days that I really dreaded was that day that those seniors had to turn their uniforms in and say, you know, and say goodbye. This is the last time that, you know, that we see them. It's really, you know, because you pretty much live with them for 4 years.
Right.
And it makes it really tough.
Sticking with 6A, let's go to Division II Americas with an exciting game. Thought I'd lose my voice Friday night going into Saturday. We still had one more game to cover Saturday, but I mean, what an effort, you know, by the Americas Trailblazers. I mean, this was a game that just really went back and forth. Credit to Friendship as well. They were prepared early on, but, you know, Americas just imposed their will in that second half. You know, if it wasn't for a couple of big plays in the second half for Friendship, Americas probably would have won this game by two scores. Sure. Everybody's talking about that 2-point conversion, but when I look back on this game, and I wrote about this in the Sunday Notebook this past weekend on Town Talk Sports El Paso, that third and five play where they went with the fullback draw or the fullback dive, you know, that to me is the bigger play because you set it up. And I said to you on air before that, okay, how creative do you get here? And you kind of agreed with me. We thought, okay, maybe in the past. No, you stick with what's gotten there, your offensive line, and then you give it to the fullback up the middle from 11 yards out, and nobody in that stadium was expecting it. And most importantly, the 11 guys on defense weren't expecting
it. They certainly
weren't. So while everybody was saying, oh, that's a gutsy call to go for the 2-point conversion, well, that if you would have watched that third and five play, you know, okay, you're going for it regardless. There was no question. And Joshua Lubakava made a great play. Great play call by Patrick Melton, the offensive staff, but that America's offensive line is the reason why America's hosted a trophy last Friday.
Well, you know, I've talked to different people over the weekend, and you know, their comments were, you know, America's is a one man team. It's Aaron Dumas. He carries the ball so many times.
Nope.
So you know, he's not the only one that does it. He's the one that has the ball, but you know, there has to be a path cleared for him to move down the field, and that's where not just the offensive line, but you know, the quarterback. Mike Noel, he did a great job of running the team. And then the fullback, as you talked about, you know, he had that one carry. You know, he has one touchdown for the season, and it happened the other night. Very important. But most of the time, you know, he's busting his butt trying to block linebackers.
Right.
That's what he does.
Yeah. You know, they put him in a three-point stance. They line up out of a pistol. Shoot, they line up out of a shotgun. Yeah. And you see the fullback there in the three-point stance. You know, Patrick Melton's an old-school coach. Yeah. Obviously, he's adjusted to kind of the quote-unquote modern area where, yeah, they'll spread it out, but still has an extra blocker back in the backfield, which is important. And to reward Rubakava, who we've seen all year long doing the dirty work. We've seen America's, four or five times this year, maybe even six. Yeah. You know, that is that's a testament. You know, and not only that, what that tells me, that's a testament to your program. Mm-hmm. Patrick Melton wants to run the football. So you're not going to shy away from that when it's crunch time. When you're not only that, but his kids were reacting. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of you know, I'm not saying actual punches, but punches being thrown back and forth by both teams, big plays, certain stops. You know, so America's, for them to respond like the way that they did it, and usually you challenge your team in those situations, right, Coach? Mm-hmm. A 2-point conversion, a fourth down and short. This is what we do.
Right.
That is what was more exciting, is that that's America's brand of football that we've gotten to know under Patrick Melton the past 11 years, and they executed in the big time to get, you know, to move on to the next round of the playoffs, and that to me is what was special about that win.
Well, it certainly was, and you know, I've talked about it before. You know, when you have a coach that's aggressive, then the kids are going to be aggressive. You know, if you would have sat back and said, okay, you know what, let's kick it and let's go for the tie. You know, I can tell you right now by experience, those kids, you know, they're not going to like that. They're not going to believe in that, because they would have believed that they can go 3 yards and you know, get those extra points. They can do that.
So America's with a tall task in the 6A Division II area round. They draw Arlington. Of course, we'll get to that one shortly. Sticking with our playoff review from the bi-district round, let's go to district or Class 5A Division I. Lubbock Coronado defeated Eastwood 54-41. The Troop got to host a playoff game for the second consecutive year. This was a game late when I actually showed up to this one, and Andrew Martinez went up top, cut the lead down to just a two-score game, but Coronado just continued to impose their will. That quarterback, Sawyer Robinson, just a talent. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The kid is just a junior. I had different people even texting me while I was at the game talking about it. We didn't know Lubbock Coronado had a quarterback, but that is like, oh, well, Lubbock Coronado usually every year has a good quarterback like that. And the person that texts me isn't privy to high school football like I am. So, you know, every year Coronado pumps out quarterbacks, and this guy is definitely a difference. I explained to you the one play where I was on the field, and there was leverage between a linebacker and a running back. And as soon as that linebacker turned his hips up field, you know, the 6'5 Robertson just flung it in the flat for a first down really quickly. And that's all I needed to know of what Eastwood was facing. And we knew that coming in. Before Eastwood, I mean, what a tremendous gutsy year for them in a sense. So much downfall, so much adversity. Yep. Starting before the season with the whole Plano controversy and then losing the next player that was very instrumental to their teams the past couple years in Eddie Cruz, you know, and then obviously getting off to a 1-4 start to be able to make the playoffs and host a playoff game. That's a tribute to the toughness of those kids. And the toughness that I saw from Andrew Martinez, you know, Eastwood's going to be just fine. They got another good quarterback coming up. It seems like every year death taxes Eastwood has a good quarterback. Another one with Andrew Martinez, and I'm excited to see his career grow under the tutelage and offense of Julio Lopez.
Well, I mean, it's almost expected that that's going to happen. You know, we look forward to that. But again, I want to echo the sentiments too about what Eastwood went through. You know, no program should have to go through something like that throughout the season, and then expect to be successful and win. And I think that's a big key.
Staying in Class 5A Division I, Del Valle. A weird game, you know, a weird game to me against Abilene Cooper. That's the only way I could describe this one. A weird game. Abilene Cooper wins 42-21. Del Valle turned the ball over 6 times in this game, but they were down just 7 at halftime. They held what I was really concerned about was the running game of Cooper. No problem for Del Valle. 55 yards in the first half, they held Cooper, but the big plays. Always in the playoffs, the turnovers, they lead to big plays. Every year there's a certain game like that where no matter how well you play, if you're turning the ball over, the other team's going to make big plays. And that really what it was in that second half. It got away from Del Valle. 2 pick sixes in the first half, and then they returned another one, I believe, in the third quarter. You know, that's tough to overcome no matter how well you're playing on defense.
Well, it certainly is. And then you take into fact that you got to drive all the way to Abilene, which is about 10 or 11 hour bus ride, and you're playing a very good Abilene Cooper team. So, you know, you have all these things against you, and, you know, credit to the Del Valle Conquistadores and that coaching staff, because you could tell that they had those kids ready to play.
Yeah, big credit to them to be able to hang in that game in the first half. Despite, you know, 2 pick sixes in the first half. That was all. That was all. Only points that Abilene Cooper was able to generate was on defense. Sebastian Carr engineered a touchdown drive to cut the lead in half. But just not enough consistency for Del Valle on offense. And that's really been the story for them this year. Now, you know, looking forward to Del Valle, this is definitely maybe the last down year that they're going to have over the next few years, because we've heard that their JV was really good. We heard their freshman won district. We heard their 8th grade won district. We won their 7th grade won their league. So the well is definitely wet down there in the lower valley, and I'm excited to see where Coach Contreras takes the program over this next few years, and the new breed, the new blood, I guess you can say, even though they've been there for a while, but a new leader at the top for Del Valle. But like they will every year, I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, well, you know, if you were to ask Coach Contreras about how his first year went, you know, he'll probably tell you, there's some things that maybe I didn't think through. Maybe I didn't completely do what I needed to do, but, you know, that just comes with experience. It's hard to do the first year.
Yeah, so definitely a good foundation, though, with the lower-level programs that they have going down to their feeder school. So Del Valle, just like they always will, they will be just fine. Let's pick up a 4A game. As we said, there was some history made, and Clint made big history.
Yes.
34-21 win over San Angelo Lakeview. Clint had been to the playoffs in 22 previous seasons, hadn't won a playoff game.
Right.
That changed. This Clint team, you know, congratulations to the Clint program. I mean, it's definitely overdue. That this is a program that really has been competing for years in football at a high level. They just haven't gotten over that hump in the second round or in the first round. They have a great basketball program, you know, currently right now. But sticking to the football side, just an exciting win for the Clint program. I mean, anytime you can break that type of history or make that type of history, you know, you got to feel good no matter who you're playing in the area around.
Well, you know, I mean, after trying for so many years, you know, after a while you get complacent. Well, we're going to go in the playoffs. We'll play the bye district, and then we'll see what happens. But, you know, I mean, kudos to the Clint Lions for their determination. A lot of this had to do with just, you know, their determination. They've already had the experience. You know, they just needed that to get kicked up one more step, you know, play a little bit harder, and they found that.
So Clint with a big win, they move on to the area round. Like I said, we will look at those games here shortly. Going back to Class 5A Division 2, the Parkland Matadors, the lone unbeaten team. There's only three unbeaten teams in Class 5A Division 2, and that one of them is Parkland. The other one is Aledo. The other one is Manville. So you see the kind of the class that Parkland is in, and they took care of business against Bowie 64-28. But La Bowie, like always, they fought. First play of the game, 80-yard touchdown run. It was just a 15-14 game. Parkland held the lead at the end of the first quarter. But this Parkland team, like we've been saying all year, they're just on another level in terms of speed, depth. And not only that, but this is becoming the norm for them. This is their fourth straight by district title. They're expected to go to the second round. They're expected to go to the third round. You know, Coach Eric Franz, since he took over that program, you know, he was the defensive coordinator the first year with Josh Kirkland, who's now the running backs coach at Incarnate Word, an FCS program out of San Antonio. Since those two took over that program, you know, this has been the norm. This has been expected. So it's not really a surprise, but it's now you're getting, and we'll get to this with Parkland, but it's about taking care of business. Bowie gives you some trouble early like we expected. How do you respond and how do you finish? And that's what Parkland did.
Yeah, and that was the key. You know, because Bowie came in, you know, I can guarantee you they were not intimidated one bit, you know, and that showed in the first series, scoring first, you know, playing them close. But, you know, sometimes, you know, someone needs to put a little pressure on you to see how you're going to react. And so they put a little pressure on Parkland, and, you know, Parkland passed the test. They knew how to react.
So Parkland moves on. They will play Old High out of Wichita Falls. Wichita Falls High School, we will get to that preview here just shortly. Two more games to review from the bi-district round, sticking in 5A Division 2. Another 5A Division 2 team that has just played tremendous when it comes to playoffs, particularly that first round, the Burgess Mustangs. Second consecutive season, the Mustangs are in the area round. They defeated Ysleta 45-13. We were wondering what was going on with Ysleta. We found out that they had some difficult injuries that they were dealt with, particularly the biggest injury of the whole weekend. Giovanni Martinez, you know, a guy that was consistently good. He was our Week 10 Town Talk Sports El Paso Player of the Week. You know, basically single-handedly seemed like he got him in the playoffs in that game. He goes down. That was a big blow. Injuries are the theme all year for Ysleta, but, you know, a credit to Ysleta for still making the playoffs. Last year, we've touched on it a few times on the podcast of how their season went south. Basically north to south last year. This year kind of went the opposite way, south to north. But then it went down again. You know, obviously it was probably tough figuring out, you know, finding out during the middle of the week as a coaching staff that you're not going to have your best offensive player. That throws a big wrench into your game plan.
Sure. And, you know, you think back at the teams at the end of the season that probably were most hurt by injuries. We talked about Franklin and the injuries they had. And then the Ysleta Indians, you know, to be working so hard to get to the level and the point that they got to this past week, and all of a sudden you've got to deal with injuries, and you know it's not easy trying to mix and match players that really, you know, don't have the experience in certain positions. You know, that's tough to do.
And for Burgess, Robert Hall and Tavares Jones finally got going. We've seen kind of a drop off from Robert Hall's production this year, but, you know, I'm not sure if that's due to injury or what the case may be with Burgess. But to see those two guys come back and to have, you know, Odwin Caldwell, who's just an efficient guy. When he's efficient, efficient. You know, and then you got the Marinko kid making big plays exactly. on that screenplay. You know, that makes them dangerous. Now, they got a tough draw on Lubbock Cooper. That's going to be a tall task for anybody. Lubbock Cooper ranked top six, top seven in the state, depending on where you look. But Burgess, I think, you know, you're talking about bouncing back. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the big question. How do you respond? That's right. definitely not the response or definitely not the outcome they wanted against Austin, getting held to basically shut out in a sense, just a field goal. But for them to bounce back the way they did, regardless of where Yeseda was at with their roster, that just shows how good of a coach Coach Rutledge is to being able to figure it out. And, you know, we talked with a couple coaches that had tough losses in week 11 going to the playoffs, dusting yourself off, picking yourself mm-hmm. up. It's a new season, like you mentioned at the top of the podcast, yep. Coach, and Burgess really seemed like that was their rallying cry last week.
Yeah, and I was getting, to be honest with you, I was getting a little worried about them yet, the way they played their last two games, and figured maybe, you know, maybe something's going on. Maybe it is injuries. But, you know, all questions were answered last week. You know, the players that needed to step up actually stepped up. And you know, I mean, I like the situation going in. Yes, they're the underdog. You know, but that opponent that Burgess has, you know, probably thinks that, you know, it's going to be an easy game. That's just how it happens, you know. And it's a great time for Burgess to surprise. Again, the key is going to be starting off quickly. If you can start off quickly, get a turnover, get a quick score, you know, get the opponent to start thinking about, you know, what they need to do, you have an advantage there.
In the final by district game on Saturday that happened in El Paso, the El Paso opponent didn't do what Coach just said. The Eastlake Falcons, a rough finish to their season, but some records were broken. Matthew Jones, you know, had a tremendous ball game in that one. 25 catches, 290 yards, 3 touchdowns. That sets the state record. 4 receptions in a game. He also set the city reception record in terms of receptions in a single season with 116, but getting off to a slow start, an interception on the first play of the ball game by Ryan Olivas. A defensive touchdown, I believe, in that game as well for Lubbock Monterey. And before you look up, it's 28-0 Monterey. Yep. That can't happen. But the second half, Eastlake fought back. They got into their offense. Ryan Olivas, you know, the guy's going to be a stud. There's nothing. I mean, we've said it a few times. Yeah. He's going to be good next year. This was a big learning experience for them. Certainly. Next year is going to be a big, big year for Eastlake. But that Monterey team, wow. We were impressed with their size, their execution. There was a chance in that game in the second half where they could have folded and let Eastlake get back into that ballgame. But credit to Coach Wayne Hutchinson and the staff. They got it together. They finished strong. And that's a team that they got a tough draw in the next round with Birdville. But I wouldn't want to play them with the athletes and the size that they have. That's a tough team.
That is definitely a tough team. And when you look at their scheme, you know, I looked at their scheme offensively. You know, are they going to run the ball? Are they going to throw the ball? You know, with the athletes that they have, they can pretty much dictate what they want to do. You know, that big running back, I forget his name, number 44.
Ty Washington.
Yeah, he was a monster. Not only that, but he had some speed on that one play that he broke for 70 yards. I mean, he just went straight up the middle. Nobody touched him. Nobody even knew where he was. But, you know, He's like 6'3", 6'4". They were all very impressive.
So 7 El Paso teams are turning in their equipment today or have turned in today. 5 more get to practice and travel this weekend. Let's look at the area around. The action starts on Thursday. All of these games can be heard on Town Talk Sports El Paso, towntalksportselpaso.com, and the Town Talk Sports El Paso mobile radio app. Make sure to download that today so you don't miss any second of the action this weekend in the area round. Let's start off with our Thursday matchup, the Hanks Knights versus the Wichita Falls Rider Raiders. And the 2018 semifinalists are back in the second round, the 10th straight season that Rider is in the playoffs. They have a very talented quarterback in Jacob Rodriguez that we got to witness last year. Over 1,000 yards rushing, threw for 4 touchdowns last week in their bye district win, has 25 touchdowns on the season. Nick Darkus, one of their top targets, also a really good basketball player. He has over 1,000 yards receiving, and I believe he had 2 touchdown catches last week. That's what put him at 10. Got a great defense. You got a 3-star recruit in the middle, Omarion Banks, a defensive end, a guy that they can move at the 3-tech, guys that can move at nose, you can put him at the end. A very, very talented, but more so, Coach, the key for Ryder, they're physical. That they is their are. Game, and if you're not physical with them, they put up 63 points on you like that.
Yes, without blinking an eye. But, you know, I mean, and offensively, it all starts with the quarterback. You know, Jacob Rodriguez is all of 6'3", 210 pounds, and I think that's stating it a little bit below.
Right.
But you know, you look at those stats and you think, well, maybe he's one of these big fullback types. No, he's a quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. You know, he throws a good ball. He runs that offense very efficiently. And I'm looking forward to watching him.
So Hank's in the area around for the first time since 1995. Of course, their high-flying passing attack is led by Aaron Molina, just shy of 3,000 yards, 2,980 passing yards, 33 passing touchdowns, also 872 rushing yards and 11 rushing touchdowns. Obviously, Michael Blanco is going to be a big key in this one. El Paso's all-time leader in receptions, also has 21 receptions on the season. But the question that I posed to you on air when we were looking at this game, when we're doing the Midland game of a potential matchup, was, you know, he gets, finally we get to see somebody defend him other than an El Paso team,
right?
So how Ryder goes about defending them is going to be the most interesting aspect of the game, because obviously Austin took away Blanco in a sense. He still had 74 receiving yards, but when they took them away, Hanks, when Austin took that away, Hanks didn't panic. They just ran the football
exactly,
and they executed well. So that game plan or that adjustment is going to be something that it's going to be key for Hanks to be able to put up points like we're used to them doing.
Well, and I'm sure Coach Blair has already had that in mind. He's already figured out the game plan as far as that is concerned. What I see is they're going to double Blanco.
Yeah,
especially early on. You know, to see how the offense for Hanks adjusts. You know, I mean, I don't want to put added pressure on Aaron Molina. He's only a junior, but he doesn't play like a junior,
right?
You know, and he's a good leader out there, but I think the pressure is going to fall on him early to figure out, number one, what the coverage is going to be and how they're going to cover Blanco and his other receivers, and then maybe try and run the ball that way.
Looking at them up front, it's going to be tough for them to have the deep passing game, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because Ryder has a very good defense in the line. It's not so much about the secondary. Yeah, there's some talent in the secondary, but when you look at the four seniors up front, Ian Story, A.J. Sargent, Isaiah Wetzel, we talked about Amarion Banks. They combined for almost 19 sacks and 53 tackles for loss this season. That was before the district, the bye district game last week, in which, you know, they just totally dominated the team from Fort Worth that they played. It was a 63-13 game, and then they put in the JV guys. You know, to me, that's the key matchup. How can Hanks's offensive line hold up against that defensive line of Ryder? Now, does Hanks adjust? Like you mentioned, Coach Blair, I'm sure, is already in the playbook with Coach Omar Garcia. Are we going short passes? Are we going screens? Yes. Are we going to try to get outside of them? That's the big chess match there, because sure, if Ryder can win that point of attack and they're playing in Hanks' backfield, you know, Hanks is going to have to account for that quickly, or not, you know, this one will get out of hand really quickly for them.
Oh, well, it certainly can, especially if things don't go the way early on. You know, you mentioned Wetzel. He had a 32-yard touchdown interception last week on a pretty nice play that I saw on film. But, you know, they're going to be constant pressure. They're going to be constantly in the face of Aaron Molina. And, you know, the big key and the big question mark is going to be, you know, how's the offense for the Hanks Knights going to counter that?
Talking about what they do defense or what they do offensively, this is a power type of run team that based off play action. They'll do a lot of quarterback power. You know, you got some talent in there at running back. You know, they lost one of the running backs that I thought that we would see, Samuel Manuel. We saw, you know, they're going to run in a different personnel packaging at running back, but it all goes around Jacob Rodriguez, to see how they can slow him down. Because the guy, when we saw him against Andrus, he just kind of falls forward, puts his weight on you, follows his big offensive line, and all of a sudden he just turns on the juices once he finds a crease.
Comes out the other side. That's exactly right. And I think that, you know, that's one of Ryder's main improvement points, is that, you know, they'd like to control tempo.
Right.
That's what they do. You know, and you want to try and take the ball away from them, you know, or you're going to match score for score with them.
And that's what Hanks, that may be advantage Hanks if they're matching score for score for them. That may be type of a game that Hanks would like to get into, a track meet, user speed. And this one, though, I really think Hanks has to get a special teams touchdown. And that, looking at 88 again, double A's Michael Blanco, he has, I believe, 8 in his career. Obviously, Austin found out the hard way, you don't kick it to him. You know,
exactly.
That's going to be on film for Ryder to prepare for. But, you know, looking at special teams, looking at defense, you know, Hanks is, there's one of those games where they're going to need them to put either flip field position or get points in that ball game. So it's going to be a very, very interesting game on Thursday. Ryder, with all the pedigree, trying to get back to the state semifinals. That's a 6 o'clock kickoff on the Hanks channel. Coach and I will be on the call. We will start our pregame show at 5:30 El Paso time. Kickoff at 6 o'clock El Paso time. That's the only Thursday game in terms of 6A, 5A games. Friday night, Parkland will play Wichita Falls High. The Coyotes are in the second round. Been a while since they've had some success in the playoffs. You're looking at their pedigree. This is a team with six state titles. They ran shop. It looks like from 1941 to the 60s. They were feeding those kids something up there you're looking at their history. They are just talented. And now they're back in the playoffs for the second straight year, and they have a really good quarterback in Zy Graffitt. 17 touchdowns, over 2,000 yards passing. Has two really good receivers that I was impressed with on film. Zachariah Williams and Isaiah Johnson. Guys, they just kind of know how to get open. They just have a really good feel of what's going on. Ryan Murdoch, their top defender, over 100 tackles, 17 tackles for loss, 5.0 sacks. Definitely an all district player out of that district out there, which I believe is 3-5A Division II. 3-5A Division II swept 4-5A Division II, by the way. So all the schools that El Paso schools are playing from are from 3-5A Division II. But Parkland, we talked about it, but when we were talking about their game against Bowie, staying the course, staying focused. Obviously, Gabe Herrera is the key of that one. Herrera, three more passes, and he's El Paso's all-time leader in career touchdown passing yards, or passing touchdowns, excuse me. And for Herrera, never lost to an El Paso team. His last loss came in this particular round, almost in the same situation, team where we feel that they're very highly favored against, but you never know. For coach Franz, he's well aware of that, and I think that could be the message for the Parkland Matters. Look, we're in the same situation as we were last year. We were undefeated, we were heavy favored, we got punched in the mouth. Let's not let that happen again. And Wichita Falls is one of those teams that can make that happen again if Parkland starts off with a slow start like they did last year in the area round again.
Yep. Well, the worst thing that you can do if you're a part of the Parkland Matadors, number one, is look at Wichita Falls' record, which is 4-7, and think that they're confident with that, or maybe look at the points per game offensively 18 or defensively 25 and figure, we can handle these guys. That's not going to be the case. Right. You can't walk in with that type of attitude. You need to walk in with the attitude that, this is the best team that we're going to face this year, and we have to play that way.
Dante Hayes and Jesse Sandoval, the two seasoned veterans that will receive passes from Herrera. You got Hayes already over 1,000 yards. Sandoval just about 18 yards, 28 yards or so away from joining them in that mix. But to me, the most underrated thing about Parkland has been the evolution of their defense.
Oh, yes.
Xavier Simmons, we've talked about him all year. How about the sophomore, though? Joshua Montalvo, we saw him have a big game against Hanks. You also have Anthony Quintero in the defensive backfield, Jeremiah Norris up front. Richard Hernandez, he's been a stable in that secondary. He's been giving them stability at the safety spot over the past couple of years. That to me is a big deal for Parkland, and that's going to be the big test to see how far Parkland goes. Now, I'm going to be honest, in my opinion, there should be no excuse for Parkland not to be in the next round. Now it's going to get a little bit difficult with Wichita Falls Rider, but when you're looking at the bracket overall, as well as Parkland has played all year long, you expect them to be in that regional final against Lubbock Cooper.
Yes.
The question to that answer, though, it goes to the defense. And if this Parkland defense plays like we know that they can play, this makes this Parkland team just that big. And I'm giving a big indication to coach of how big that difference and where they, how good that can make them and how far that can take them in the playoffs.
Right. Well, one of the things that I think that Parkland needs to stay away from is playing from behind.
Right.
They can't afford, although they probably could with the offense that they have, but you don't want to be in a situation where you need a touchdown or you need two touchdowns in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter. You should pretty much have the game salted away by that time.
So that'll be something to keep an eye on. Another 6 o'clock El Paso start Friday from Grande Communications Stadium in Midland. Coach and I will have the call on that one. 5:30 pregame show on the Parkland Channel on Town Talk Sports El Paso. Another 5A Division II area round game, the Parkland Matadors and the Lubbock Cooper Pirates. Lubbock Cooper, they're good. there's really nothing, more to say. And then what's more interesting about Lubbock Cooper is I dare you to try to key on one guy.
Right.
You got so much talent there. It starts with the quarterback, Cooper LeFaber. You know, pick your poison with what they have there. You got Nehemiah Martinez. You got Tyler Harrison. I mean, they have literally a three deep depth chart of guys that they can just put in there. And you look at some of the stats that you, when you're looking at their box score, some guys have 4 carries, 48 yards, 5 carries, 70 yards, yeah. 6 carries, 110 yards, 2 carries, 38 yards. Yeah. That's, you don't have to watch film to know that that's difficult to defend, Coach.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, you can't sit there and as you're preparing and say you're going to key on this, you know, you're going to key on the running game, the passing game, you know, the screens, whatever it may be. You know, that's just not going to happen. You have to have a defense that's strong enough to be able to cover all phases of that offense, and that's really tough to do.
And Burgess does have that in a sense. You got Alec Marenko,
yes.
You got Daniel Solis, Chris Wilson. Those are experienced guys, but I don't know if they've faced a monster Lubbock Cooper. So executing, you know, Burgess does have the front line, maybe not so much the depth behind the guys that we mentioned, but you keep those guys healthy, you know, it's the end of the season, you expect those guys to be able to go a full 48 on defense.
Right.
There's a shot there, but what I'm looking at more is Burgess's offense against Lubbock Cooper's defense. This is a Lubbock Cooper team that held the team that's put up 60 points on everybody pretty much all year in Monterey to just 13 points early in the season. That's impressive. You know, we said it at the same time there. That's from what we saw last week, you know, and not only that, but some of the other games that you're looking at, trying to see here, Lubbock Coronado. They held Lubbock Coronado to 21 points. Where's the blueprint for that? Because no other team has slowed them down, but Lubbock Cooper has. I mean, this team is loaded. I'm pretty sure they're very upset that they lost last year to Ryder in the semifinals.
Yeah.
This is a team that has state championship aspirations. It was a regional final last year, so they have Ryder's number.
Yeah.
They may be overlooking certain teams, particularly from El Paso. So for Burgess, playing with that chip on your shoulder, that may be the biggest advantage that Burgess has in this ballgame, besides that talented backfield with Caldwell, Jones, and Robert Hall.
Well, I mean, you've got to, not only do you have to match their intensity, okay, but you have to match their aggressiveness.
Right.
Because they're gonna come out and be aggressive, you know. And if you're not ready for that, you know, it could be a long night. So, you know, and everything is gonna be established early on in the game. The first couple of series is gonna establish that.
I think on both sides of the ball, that will be the big thing to keep an eye out on. That's a 6 o'clock start from Panther Stadium in Fort Stockton, Texas. 6 o'clock kickoff, 5:45 p.m. pregame show, I believe, we'll get with Mike Montes and Christian Molinar. They will have the call for that one, but that one you'll catch on the Burgess channel. Regardless of when the pregame show starts, that will be a 6 p.m. kickoff on the Burgess channel. The final game from Friday night in the Class 5A Division II area round, the Canotillo Eagles taking on the Canyon Randall Raiders. And, you know, you're looking at this one, and it's always easy to look at 9-2 versus 4-7. That's a shoe-in. It's not. Same situation. We just talked about it with Parkland. This is the same team that was in the same situation last year of Canyon Randall. 4-7. They didn't look like a 4-7 team, Coach.
Not at all.
They did not look like a 4-7 team in that ball game. They jumped out on Parkland. Parkland actually, you know, fought back to make it close. But, you know, this is a similar situation.
It is.
But the more interesting thing about these two teams is it's not like that Parkland Randall game of last year. We had two contrasting styles. These are two teams that want to control the ball.
Yes.
They want to play smash mouth football. Now, Canotillo maybe has executed a little better in terms of statistics. So, you know, even though, you know, people from the outside may think that Randall is the favorite in this game, and that's safe to say, but, you know, the way that Canotillo has played all year long and finding different ways, and you know, that really builds a fire and a chemistry.
Yes.
And you know from coaching that's very tough to beat. And I think in this particular game for Canotillo, I think Canotillo is a heavy favorite just because of the fact that they've played so many close games and they've had so many injuries and they've had to figure things out than most teams that just have their bread and butter. That's advantage Canotillo, and I really like the Eagles' chances in this game.
And you know, they've got the ace in the hole, and that's the coaching staff and the experience of the coaching staff, because they've been here before, and they know how to make those types of adjustments. Scott Brooks and his crew, they know exactly what they need to get done. You know, although, you know, I hear some people say, well, that's boring because all they do is run the ball. You know, if that's what you do well, that's how you win ball games.
Well, I don't think Andrews thought it was boring when they saw Canotillo celebrating on their own field week, or on Canotillo's home field. But, you know, that's going to be the key. Joaquin Carrasco, how big of a guy he's been stepping up? You know, when Carlos Amato went down, All he's done is average 145 and a half yards per game, sprinkling a couple 200-yard games in that mix. And then you got Amato starting to slowly get his way back from injury. Yeah. And then how about throwing in a freshman in L.J. Martin who scores five touchdowns in his first six varsity games? That is a big, big advantage. But not only that, but defensively. We've liked this Canotillo defense from the start of the season. You got Josiah Holloway, the kid that we've talked about every week on this podcast. But throw in Kayan Perez. Leads the team in tackles. Very physical safety out there. He's going to probably have to step up and run support, which is a good thing for Canotillo. Yeah, that adds you an extra sure tackler there in the middle. I really just like Canotillo's chances in this game, though, Coach.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I saw Canotillo early on scrimmaging in Franklin. And one of the things that impressed me was Canotillo's defense. You see, strong, aggressive, and they run to the football. And it's continued throughout the season. And I expected to have a real good game.
That's a 6 o'clock start Friday night from the Mustang Bowl in Andrews, Texas. We will have that one on the Canotillo channel. We're going to get some help from our Town Talk Sports sisters and brothers up there from the Lubbock area. We will have Eric Martinez on the call for that one. 6 o'clock start on the Canotillo channel, Canotillo and Canyon Randall. The final matchup between 6A and 5A schools, Saturday, November 23rd, 2 p.m. kickoff in the SAC. Coach and I will be on the call. Or not in the SAC. The SAC's over. We're not playing no more games in the SAC.
It's over.
We're at Grande all weekend. We're living in Grande all weekend. We're Midland residents with El Paso Hearts this weekend. 2 p.m. kickoff at Grande Communication Stadium in Midland, Texas. The America's Trailblazers and the Arlington Colts. Arlington stacked. Only way to put it. We got a copy of their roster today. 127 players or 126 on their roster. Of course, that's mixing JV and varsity, but talent all over. You got a four-star guy on the defensive side. You got a guy that could be one of the top receivers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. That was a sophomore last year. Is one of the top top sophomore receivers in the Dallas area. Well, he's playing quarterback this year. Mm-hmm. You got B.J. Rogers, who ran for 196 yards on state-ranked Arlington Lamar. You got a defense with just talent, size. America's, to say the least, will have their hands full against Arlington.
Well, they certainly will. And I watched a little bit of film this morning on Arlington, and I had to keep rewinding and rewinding and rewinding and just going over. They're just very impressive. They've got good size, and of course they're athletes. But this is the Metroplex area. This is what you're going to see in that Metroplex area.
And the quarterback running back battle will be very interesting.
Yes.
You're looking at Chris Sims, the quarterback from Arlington, a very, very athletic guy that can run the ball. He can throw it as well. He does a good job of keeping his eyes downfield and not bailing too quick, even though he has that ability to run. And then we mentioned B.J. Rogers. He's got the power. He's got the speed. That's the most impressive thing is because he's a big back. But once he gets to that second level, he can outrun any safety.
Yes, he can.
Particularly looking at that Dallas area where everybody's fast. Everybody's a track star up there. He makes those guys look slow. And not only, like we mentioned, Jahari Rogers, a four-star already committed to Florida. This is how talented this Arlington team is. Let's just break it down. So you're looking at a guy like Jahari Rogers, threw for just shy of 2,000 yards last year, a bunch of touchdowns, dual threat guy, close to 1,000 yards, projected to be the starting quarterback this year. Well, Arlington decides, let's just put him on defense full time. We got somebody, and they put in Sims, who really, there was like,
a junior.
He's a junior. There was a couple of games where, maybe there was a law there while he was getting used to it. But towards the end of the season, when it counts the most, the kid's playing on a different level. That right there, it just shows how deep that Arlington program is.
Right. And then, you look at that district. We're talking about, we're giving high praise to a team who finished fourth in their district.
Right.
That's kind of scary.
And a district that swept the other district in a sense, that another one of those sweeps. So, you're looking at them as being, and we were talking about it. This may be the third or fourth best team out of Arlington this year. But, that's saying kind of a lot. And that's more of a compliment than anything to them and showing how well they play. But for America's, we know what they have. Obviously Aaron Dumas, what extra are you looking for from this America's team to being able to compete with the caliber of teams that now they'll be facing, regardless? The winner of this one, you get Denton Guyer or Cedar Hill. The competition is just going to get stiffer. But what are you looking at for America's to, maybe something that we've seen, maybe something we haven't seen, maybe another gear that they have? What do you want to see for America's to keep this one close with Arlington?
Right. Well, in getting in the minds of the Arlington coaches, they're going to stop Aaron Dumas. that's going to be their primary plan, you know, which means they may bring up a safety. And I think to Arlington, it doesn't matter whether they bring up a safety or bring up two safeties. You know, whoever's left back there to cover, they'll be able to cover, you know. But I think that Americas will have to at some point go play action, you know. And I think Mike Noel is a good quarterback to be able to run that type of play action. But for that, he has to sit in the pocket or maybe sprint out, bootleg, you know, and just hit the flats. He doesn't have to throw deep, you know, something to move the ball. You know, the advantage for America is like it was in the second half last week against Friendship, is to control the clock, control the tempo. That's what they're best at. That's what's going to give them the best chance to win.
And to me, you got to have another wide receiver step up. Sure. You know, you're looking at Sir Drennan. Mm-hmm. Evan Chisholm obviously is going to play a lot of defense. You know, I think they may up his snaps, particularly at wide receiver.
Right.
If they do find a way to stop Aaron Dumas, that's going to put a little bit of pressure on Noel. What will help Noel is having some of those receivers step up. Sir Drennan's had a quiet past couple weeks. Really hasn't had to do much. Evan Chisholm, you know, he's productive when he's in at wide receiver, plays defensive back more, like I just mentioned.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see the personnel groupings that Americas throws out there.
Right.
We saw them kind of look at tight end, way more tight ends, obviously trying to run the ball against Friendship. But, you know, what if you see play action and the tight end leak up the seam?
Exactly.
Those could be little wrinkles that Americas can throw in. Like you said, when you throw downfield, if Americas throws downfield, it's got to be set up by the play action.
It does. And, you know, I mean, you have a tight end and a model that they have that, you know, they really haven't use that much,
right?
But you know, he can catch the ball, and you know, the if they're going to bring the backers to stop the run, you know, that area behind the linebacking spot, it's going to be wide open, and that's a nice place for a model to be.
And another big matchup, we talked about the quarterback running back matchup for each team's the defensive line, offensive line matchup on both sides. That's going to be another key. If America's defense can put pressure, like we know they can, on Sims, you know, stop Rodgers in the backfield, they're going to have to gang tackle everybody.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's going to have to gang tackle. You're going to have to be the physical team. Obviously, Arlington has some physicality too. Mm-hmm. Arlington has definitely the better team speed.
Yes.
But what I think America's, their strength in this ball game is that they can play physical and push Arlington around, kind of make Arlington think, oh, we're not going to be able to run around or push around this El Paso team. Setting the tone early. We always talk about early starts. America's obviously is a team that can score with anybody. But just that first hit, you know, that first hit, whether it's on the kickoff, whether it's on defense, I think that is a big psyche element for America's to just feel like, okay, we belong here with Arlington.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, something that America's, we talked about, America's hasn't really done that much all year, is bringing linebackers. Because they've been able to do it with their front four, you know. But I think this would be a good time to start planning some, you know, some blitzes where they're actually bringing linebackers that Parkland, I mean, that Arlington has not seen, you know. The only thing that worries me about that bringing pressure is not to leave lanes for the quarterback, Sims, because if he finds a seam, he's going to take it.
And not only that, but they do have a big play receiver. See if I wrote his name down here. Davis, number one. Or is it, I'm not sure if we got his name right on any of our lists here.
I saw that one of the receivers, number 13, Lucky, I think his name is.
Yeah, I mean, they got speed galore. I mean, that's a team that, you know, you're looking at Arlington and that aspect, and it's really avoiding getting gashed.
Yes.
I think that's really the big thing more than anything. It's just avoiding that big gash play, the chunk play. That's something that Friendship sort of exposed.
Yes.
And that's something that you got to, because the player I'm looking for is Brown, Charles Brown. That guy, you know. You got to have a game plan for him because he's electric. He's probably one of the fastest receivers in the Dallas area. Yeah. Looking at Charles Brown and some of the production that he puts, he's one of those one step and go type of guys. Get north, get south, and go. You know, how do you go about trying to clean up that when that could be a problem again? Obviously, America's did a good job of that with their offense last week with keeping the ball away. But defensively against Arlington, do you double or do you just? It's as simple of just bringing pressure, even though you give up that kind of opportunity for them gashing a big one behind that pressure.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if you double, you know, that takes away a man up the middle. You know, I'd like to have at least one safety in the middle of the field in case the running back breaks, which we've seen him break a lot during this season. So, you know, I don't know. I would shy away from doubling him and just sort of take your chances there. If they want to throw to him every play, you know, then so be it.
So it'll be a big game for the America's safeties. Nate Alvarado came away with the closing interception to seal it out. And then obviously some talent there. Derek Saldivar, Evan Chisholm. You got some pieces there to move around. So it will be very interesting to see how America's counters. Didn't forget about the 4A D1s. They play on Thursday. Clint and Springtown Thursday from Mustang Stadium in Andrews, Texas. Decatur, unbeaten Decatur, taking on Mountain View. 8-3, the Lobos are. It's a Thursday start, 6 p.m. in Ratliff. You know, 4A football, it's sort of the same as 6A, except when you get to the area around, sometimes you're going to play those type of teams, the 10-1s, the 11-0s, the state contenders. Usually 5A, 6A, you know, if you're an El Paso team or a District 1 team, third round, fourth round, maybe, if you're lucky, you'll see those contenders. But right away in 4A football, it's a different story, because usually second or third round, you're facing somebody that has state title aspirations. And that's both what Clinton and Mountain View are running into this week.
Right. And, I mean, you know, you can look at it as a reward, you know, winning the bi-district and getting to the next area round. But then on the other hand, you have to look at the, you know, what's up the road? Right. Who's next coming up? And, you know, it makes it that much tougher, not only to try and prepare, but, you know, you're talking about teams that maybe don't travel and haven't faced this type of competition before, and that makes it doubly tough.
But it's really good just to see these 4A schools starting to improve, improve themselves. Obviously, it's tough to improve numbers when you're out there. You know, that's something that's, you know, even dampening schools in El Paso. You know, you look at some 5A schools that, you know, just get gutted, you know, because of you know, the way that it is now, where, you know, there's open enrollment, you know, and that's so to see these schools being able to thrive. You know, the next step is now competing with the Decatur, competing with the Springtown. Exactly. Yes, you're heavy underdogs. You know, everybody knows that, but to go out there and compete and continue to improve, that's what we want to see from the 4A team. So good luck to everybody in the area around. All seven teams that are still alive from the El Paso area will be rooting and broadcasting and reporting all of the action this weekend. Don't forget to check out the website, towntalksportselpaso.com. We will have our broadcast schedule, links to every game, and the preview of every game that we are covering this week on Town Talk Sports El Paso. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at TTSportsEP. The man behind the madness, Monster Medina, will be working the Twitter machine on Friday night, as we will get you up to the minute scores from around the state as the area playoffs are underway. Facebook.com/TTSportsEP, where you can find all of our archive articles, and on Instagram at TTSportsEP. So for the coach, Tony Grijalva, I'm Alex Nicolas, wrapping up another edition of the Texas High School Football Roundtable right here on Town Talk Sports El Paso. We'll talk to you from the press box this weekend. Go El Paso!